The Mike Missinelli Show.
Again, one of the things that these players are going through, right now they are in phase three, which is an individual workout, and team flights begin tomorrow to get down to Orlando, which is phase 4A. And so let's welcome on the program right now, 76er starting guard Josh Richardson joins us. Josh, how you doing today?
I'm good.
Awesome. Now let me start from the beginning here, because I want to first of all address this. There are a lot of players, obviously, over the last several weeks have expressed their concerns about going down there. Where are you right now personally?
Like, where am I mentally?
Where are you mentally as far as undergoing this monumental task that you guys are trying to pull off?
I'd say I'm probably in the middle of the road on it, just because, I don't know, it's pretty scary going down there, and then with everything that's going on right now, whether it's in a social climate or with the COVID stuff going on. So I guess we just kind of have to navigate it as we go, because I feel like everybody's kind of excited, but still worried about it.
Yeah, I can see the worry. Obviously, the social issues that Kyrie brought up, and you're thinking about all that. But you know what? I guess where I'm going is that to be really successful, you kind of have to be committed to this whole thing. And I'm just wondering what kind of ball we're going to see. Do you worry? Do you look at it that way as well?
No.
Okay.
I feel like if guys go down there, I mean, once we get inside that 94, like, everybody's going to be fully committed. But it's once the games aren't going and you know what I'm saying, everything that comes outside of that.
All right. You guys have been in phase three with the individual workouts. Tomorrow, the team flights. Are you headed down there tomorrow?
The 9th.
Oh, okay. You're headed down the 9th. And then, of course, you have to be, you know, when you get down there, you have to be isolated and have two negative COVID tests at least 24 hours apart. What have the individual workouts been like for you?
Solid, you know, high intensity. And, you know, if I'm working out, I'm going to be working out hard as I can. So I've been getting ready.
Now, what were you doing during the whole idle time? Because that's a major question for a lot of players, and you know better than anybody that basketball shape is different than staying kind of cardio, whatever you were doing, biking, whatever, running. So how has that been a smooth transition from that part to individual workouts, and do you feel you're in basketball shape?
You know, it's impossible to simulate game shape and being in, you know, the best shape for a game, but I feel like for where we at now, I'm in pretty good shape. And like the whole downtime, I turned my garage into a gym. You know, I got a stationary bike down there, and I was working. So I think I'll be ready.
Okay. Now, you know, that adrenaline when you play on the basketball floor is a different kind of basketball shape that a lot of people don't understand, because it kind of like saps your energy as you're trying to get in basketball shape because you're so excited and that kind of thing takes over. So the big thing with the Sixers, and there are a lot of people talking about the Sixers as a team that can actually do something here in the playoffs when this resumes. Tell me why you think that is.
Just from the way we're built, I think. You know, we're a tall team, so when the game slows down, I think that we'll be able to find buckets. We can get shots over people because, you know, a lot of the shots that come in the playoffs aren't wide open. You know, you're going to have guys that can make shots and get to tough spots. And then I think we have good defenders, which means once the game slows down, those transition buckets aren't coming as easy. So you really, really trying to scrape and find a spot. And I feel like we have 5 to 8 or 9 guys who are tough to get shots over. So, I mean, I'm optimistic.
Obviously you've seen Joel Embiid. What's he look like?
It looks great.
He does. Because everybody's worried what kind of shape he's going to come back in with. He looks great.
Yeah, I mean, he's slimmer than he was when we was playing. I'll tell you that.
That's good news. That's great to hear. All right. The other thing is, now, I don't know what Brett Brown has planned and what he's been working on for the last 4 months, but a lot of people say, well, they have to change it up a little bit. One of the changes that's been suggested is that maybe you go with Shake as the one, you're the two, Ben is there, used in many different capacities, and it's a smaller lineup with Tobias, and then coming off the bench is Al Horford. Have you guys anticipated that kind of plan as you go down there?
We haven't even talked about rotations, my friend. So I don't know.
All right, but you've probably heard like these kind of things and how the lineup is going to change or what he's going to settle in. Do you have any theories on it?
I do not, my friend. I do not. I'm gonna let you stick. Take the theories.
Okay. Well, it works either way for me as long as he's got a plan. We're talking with Josh Richardson. Now, Josh, here's the thing about these games, and I don't even know if you can answer if you have a feel for it, because a lot of NBA basketball rides on emotion, rides on energy. It's like why you guys are so great at home. And so now, while the road warriors are taken away, the home crowd is taken away, have you perceived what it's going to be like to play in that environment with no crowd?
I just think it'll be like a AAU tournament when you're younger. I mean, except with a few less people, because those aren't usually packed when you're playing. So it's equal to that. There'll probably be some other players watching the games, which is really like an AAU tournament. So that's what I've been calling it.
So it's going to be pure ball. You guys get on the floor, and, you know, when you guys play pickup games, it's to stay. You're trying to win. You're trying to play your hardest, all that kind of thing. So the fan is going to see that kind of ball.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I like it. It sounds good. All right. So what are you going to do for the next couple of days before you get down there?
Eat as much food as I can because I'm going to be eating the same food for a few months. Play with my dog while I still can. That's about it. Work out. I mean, I'm about to go work out right now, but yeah, outside of hoops, I'll probably just be trying to enjoy life on the outside while I can.
All right, so when you get down there, and this is what everybody fears, that you know, some people will be inclined to go outside the bubble, go somewhere socially, whatever. What is the team's policy on that? Have you discussed that with anybody on how you guys are going to bubble down?
No, hasn't been discussed. But I can imagine it's probably not going to be 100% smooth for everyone. But, you know, that is neither here or there.
Yeah, well, you know what? They've installed the snitch line. They're calling it down there, right?
Man, I'm not going nowhere near that.
Well, there's going to be some people coming in, bringing you food and stuff like that. So hopefully, you know, that none of that kind of thing happens. This is going to be a fascinating experience, man. Probably the most interesting experience of your basketball life, right?
Yeah, you can call it that.
All right. Well, listen, get down there. There's a lot of people in this town, depending on the Sixers, to bring them some kind of joy here. And from what the experts say, you guys have a pretty good chance. So let's roll with it.
Let's roll.
Thanks for coming on, Josh.
All right, thanks for having me.
All right, man. Josh Richardson.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic.
And our next guest, who is charged with calling games in a very different and unusual way, he, of course, is the play-by-play announcer for Sixers games on NBC Sports Philadelphia, the great Mark Zumoff. Hello, Mark Zumoff.
Mikey, what's up, my man?
Well, it's getting close. And first of all, we get your whole general spin on this, but specifically, what's going through your head on how you're going to pull this off? So first of all, the bubble, it's locked down. They're going to go through with it. They're going to be on the flights tomorrow through to Thursday, get down there, quarantine the whole bit, and then we roll. What is your whole opinion on whether the NBA can pull this off or not?
certainly I'm not a public health expert, but as I think about it, and first of all, let me just say that when Adam Silver is in charge, I put my full faith and credit behind him. I think he does a great job. I think that he is up for this challenge. Remember, he was the first commissioner to stop play because of COVID. So he's forward thinking. He's progressive. He's involved the players and the players union. He's been consulting with any one of a number of public health people all along. So I think he knows what he's doing. I think that the NBA, aside from the financial ramifications, certainly sees the public benefit of doing something like this. And quite frankly, as a group, and I don't know how many there's going to be, 35 times however many teams and, you know, other officials and whatnot, maybe 1,000 or 1,500, something like that, they will be in a very controlled environment. So when you think about it, the players are going to have not only all of their facilities to work out and, of course, their hotel rooms, but there's going to be recreation areas. There's going to be things that they can do within the Disney complex. They'll have mental health people. They'll have yoga. It's going to be its own little city. So, you know, when you think about it, with all the testing that's going to be going on, with the temperature checks that are going to happen certainly every day and sometimes twice a day, you know, I feel pretty good about it. And I'm excited to be participating, even though I won't be there. I'm looking forward to what I anticipate will be games on NBC Sports Philadelphia at some point.
All right, so I get the point you're making. There's going to be like a zero grid because everybody's going to be tested. So everybody is fresh and sanitized, and it's about playing basketball in the bubble. But that's not where it stops, unfortunately. People are going to be coming in. People are going to be coming out. I don't know how tight they're going to be able to control that. And I guess what I'm saying is there's always a chance that someone is going to test positive. And so what do you like? And just, it's not going to just be one. And we're seeing it in other sports where people are testing positive. So what happens at that point? What's their plan to handle that?
Well, it's my understanding that if someone tests positive, they will be quarantined. And they'll probably do some contact tracing just to make sure that they didn't come in contact with anyone else who is in that sphere, so to speak. And then they will do what they will normally do. I would think that somewhere, somehow, somebody is considering, well, what if you get X amount of cases? Will that necessitate some sort of drastic action? But I'm fairly confident, and again, I'm not a public health official, but I'm fairly confident that with all the measures the NBA is taking, whether they're preventative or measures they have to take in case someone does have the virus, they will deal with it accordingly. So this is going to happen. There's too much momentum now, whether it's the league or the teams or the accompanying media or whatever, for this to stop. And, you know, we'll see. They're going to be down there very shortly. They will be quarantining. They're going to have some scrimmage games. They're really going to ease into this. And, you know, I would like to think that with a minimum amount of issues, whether it's infections or whatever, that this thing is going to go off and they're going to be able to finish the season.
Talking to Mark Zuboff, he's going to bring us the games. We'll talk about it in a second, how he's going to bring it. We just had Josh Richardson on, and one of the things he admitted at the top was he's scared. And a lot of these players are scared. And so, you know, it's certainly a higher priority than summer camp. But like, you used to get scared going to summer camp. You didn't know what was up when you went, once you get there. These guys, I think it's good that they're scared because that means to me they're going to take it seriously to embrace the discipline of staying in place while they're there instead of, you know, getting itchy to do something. Do you see it that way?
I'm hoping so. I hope that, you know, to if it's scared or if it's just a lot of concern, and therefore, as you say, that equals a fair or a good amount of caution. And again, the NBA has issued, and I don't know if you've seen it, but there is a handbook that we've been made privy to as members of the media where there are going to be a lot of different things for players to do. So, you know, whether it's the gaming that they like or fraternity, that sort of thing, I do know that once you get into the playoffs, there is a particular point where a limited number of family members will be able to come down and visit. So, because by then, if you're still around, you've been there, let's say a month and a half, close to 2 months, you're going to need some outside family or significant others to come down. So, listen, I'll admit that I would be concerned. I don't know if I would put the word scared behind it, but again, you're in a controlled environment. You're not going to be going to the beach. You're not going to be going to, other places where you can make contact with people who might have the virus. So I think for, what it is, it's as safe as you can get. And we've already seen some examples now. I was watching Premier League action today. I'm a Tottenham fan, and I was watching their game. And it's kind of weird to see it without fans in an empty stadium, but they've been going, and I haven't heard of anything where they feel the necessity to stop playing because of an unusual amount of infection.
I guess here's my biggest fear, that there always is a knucklehead. And that knucklehead goes outside the bubble, and there's this no snitch culture where people know he goes outside the bubble, and then he comes back, and he's not ID'd, but according to the protocol, where he would have to be isolated at that point, and then that spreads something. That's my biggest fear of this whole thing, and I hope it doesn't happen.
Well, and that's where it comes down to testing and the frequency of it, and that if that happens every day, or at the very least every other day, hopefully you catch it in time so that between isolating that person and whatever contact tracing you have to do, hopefully you've nipped it in the bud, so to speak, and it hasn't gotten out of hand. So I hear what you're saying, and as best as those plans will be laid forth, you're right, Mike, there is the possibility that, something could happen that was unforeseen, but hopefully they have all of the fail safes in place that it won't become too big of a problem.
All right, Mark Zuboff, we're talking to, and let's get to the broadcasting part of this. Very, very different environment here. What will your prep be like? How will it change when you anticipate the moment? What are we going to see with Mark Zuboff calling games?
So the prep is obviously different because before a game, it's prime time for me. There are any one of a number of coaches, players, scouts, NBA people who are around that you schmooze with, and then by the time you hit the air, you are full of stories and nuggets and late-breaking information and that sort of thing. That's not going to be able to happen. Fortunately, the Sixers PR staff is great, and over the years, because I've been doing the game for a while, I've been able to develop some really good, solid relationships with members of the coaching staff and some other folks. Elton Brand has always been great. So between all of that, I will get my information that way. It won't be in person, and I'm going to have to be dependent on those people to be my eyes and ears, but that will be that. As it relates to doing the games, again, not official from NBC Sports Philadelphia in terms of what games we'll be doing. There is a lot of chainsaws being juggled now, as you might imagine, with the Phillies coming back and the Flyers and the NHL coming back. So all that's to be determined. But it's my best guess that certainly we won't be in Orlando, and we'll be remote, and they will give us whatever they can in terms of monitors or statistical information or anything that we can get from on site that will hopefully enhance what it is that I can bring to viewers at home. I'll be doing the game off a monitor. I've done that before. It'll be strange, admittedly, doing it without fans or crowd effects or anything like that. But it is what it is, and it'll become what it'll become. And then whatever it is, I'm looking forward to it when and if it comes.
Where will the monitor be? Will you be doing this from home? Will they have the?
No. So I anticipate that we'll be in some remote location. I would say in all likelihood somewhere at the arena because we already have facilities there. We already are hooked in technically in terms of broadcast locations and booths and trucks and production facilities and that sort of thing. So all that's going to, it won't take place in Orlando, but in all likelihood, it'll be somewhere at the
arena.
Yeah, that's
the reason why I asked it, because I know that the building has been closed for a while, and, Booney's producing this show from a remote location. I didn't know whether that studio is going to be reopened so you guys can do this. And if so, then where's that put Ala, and where does Serena figure in on the broadcast?
So we'll in all likelihood be socially distanced. as any people who are working in an environment will be. And I'm sure that there will be a complete set of protocols as it relates to entering the building, where we're allowed to go, who we're allowed to interact with. And, you know, I do it now anyway, whether I go out for a walk with my wife or, you know, we happen to go food shopping, you wear a mask, you stay socially distanced, you know, all that sort of thing, plus some other things that are relative to the workplace, I'm sure will be enforced.
All right. So I've been watching the PGA and they have been socially distancing their broadcast and they set up a microphone and the golfer comes to that microphone. Is that a possibility in your broadcast? And will Serena be down there to facilitate it or not?
Yeah, no, Serena is very much going to be a part of it. And I would imagine that there will be some way in which a post-game guest can be connected to her and she'll be back with us and she'll do the interview remotely. Obviously, she's not going to be in Orlando.
Mm-hmm.
So she'll just do the interview remotely and we'll work it from that perspective. I'd like to think, Mike, that the viewer is going to be just happy to have Sixers basketball, especially if they do well. And although it's not going to be the kind of presentation that we normally give them with fans and being with the players and being able to get firsthand information, I think it's still going to be a pretty good product.
All right. Sounds good. This is a big week, so we can actually see the forest here. And we look forward to getting your broadcast and watching Sixer basketball again. And I guess I have to answer the ultimate question because we're in a discussion back and forth on what makes the people that look at the Sixers as a dangerous candidate to win the East now that we've been away from them. What has changed from what you saw previously?
That's a really good question. And it's not one that I'm prepared to answer. Certainly one thing that has changed is you have Joel Embiid. Of course, he did play that one game before the COVID shutdown, but you know that he's healthy and you know that Ben Simmons is healthy and is moving around perfectly. And as Serena Winters reported, moving around to the point where it's as if he didn't even have an injury. So everybody is healthy, which is good. Remember, they only had their starting lineup for about a third of what of the games that were already played. And I certainly think that the three scrimmages and the eight seeding games will be as much about finding lineups and finding combinations and that sort of thing as it will be about winning. This is going to be a real challenge for the coaches. I'd like to think that they're up for it. You know, they've had plenty of time to plan. But they're going to have to do what they have to do to get the team ready for the playoffs. And that's what we've been hearing from Sixers management, that this is a team that has been geared toward playoff basketball. Whatever form that takes now in this current iteration, and we don't know what playoff basketball or regular basketball is going to look like, they say that this is a team that has been geared toward the playoffs. So when that comes, we'll see how they perform.
There's a lot of talk about Shake Milton being in that starting lineup. Are you feeling the Shake, Josh Richardson, Ben Simmons perimeter with Tobias Harris and Joel Embiid with Horford coming off the bench, or you anticipate Horford going back in the starting lineup?
I certainly think it's possible for Shake to start, but remember, that lineup did not start in any of those 60-some games that were played. So it's easier said than done to say, oh, Shake Milton, he's been playing well, be great, he's another shooter, he can create off the ball, he can allow Ben Simmons off the ball, bring Al Horford off the bench, mix and match him with Embiid, blah, 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 blah. But again, that's easier said than done because they haven't really fielded that lineup at all. Mm-hmm. So again, I stress with the three or so weeks that they had before, the seeding games and the three scrimmages, I do believe as much as that will be about winning, it's also going to be about lineup combinations and starting lineups. And, we'll see how it flushes itself out. Mid-August is playoff time, and that's when the rubber is going to hit the road.
Mark, always a pleasure. Best of luck to you with this monumental task here as we get Sixer basketball back in our lives. We appreciate it.
I'll tell you what, it's the people on the front lines who are dealing with COVID patients. They're the ones who have the monumental task. Me, I'm just sitting in front of a monitor and enjoying the world's greatest game and watching my team play.
I gotcha. Thanks for coming on.
You got it, my man.
All right, there's Mark Zuboff.
The Mike Missinelli Show.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
O'clock hour, Mike Missanelli Show, 97.5 The Fanatic, and it's 7-6 day. We're talking about the Sixers and the prospects when they resume in this bubble, which they will head down to Orlando this week. And to talk about the Sixers and million other issues, I'm always glad to have my buddy Charles Barkley join us on the show. Chuck, how you feeling today?
I'm good, brother. How you doing?
Well, we're trying to get by here. Where are you right? I know your big golf tournament Tahoe is this weekend. Where are you these days?
I'm at golf school right now, getting my game ready for Lake Tahoe. I'm looking forward. I got 3 days of lessons with my teacher, and I'm looking forward to heading to Lake Tahoe Wednesday, but I'm at golf school right now.
Well, those lessons, you know, they could cloud your head when you get on the tee at the in the real show. You know,
I'm
going to
play well, Mike. Hey, number one, before we get started, I want to tell everybody out there, man, please be safe. I know this corona thing is tough, and a lot of people lost their lives. A lot of people lost their livelihood. So thoughts and prayers to everybody out there dealing with this COVID situation.
Yeah, it's well said. So, and we're going to talk about that in a second. But let's talk about, now you're getting ready to come back and do these games on TNT. And so the resumption of the NBA is kind of a wild card on who's going to come out of the gate well. And we know what the Sixers were. They were the sixth seed. But there's somehow a lot of optimism nationally and certainly locally that they can do something different in the playoffs. Do you feel that way?
Well, I've always thought the Sixers, if they could ever get healthy, would be the most dangerous team going against Milwaukee. I mean, you think about this, Mike. Other than Giannis, they're going to have the two best players in every series. I mean, so if you ask any fan or any coach, am I going to have the best two players in every series except unless you're playing Giannis, I think you'll take your chances.
No, I agree with that. Now, let's talk about the one guy that we're counting on, and you obviously have been up and down on him. If everything goes perfect and Joel Embiid comes back in great shape and dominates and can play like 38 minutes a game, then they got a fighting chance. What makes us think that could happen?
Well, I mean, I think that's a big question mark. I mean, I have not seen him yet. I don't think anybody has seen him yet. And we'll get to see him publicly in the next week and see what he did during the 3 month hiatus. I mean, listen, man, as long as Joe, as great a talent as he is, until he proves availability and can stay healthy, it's always going to be a question mark.
I'm on the edge here because I want to believe that the Sixers can be different. And then I go, okay, how? Because what I saw in the regular season that made them be the sixth seed was the lack of a blend. They didn't really have a blend. The Horford thing was, you know, like out of whack. And the guys off the bench, they couldn't get a consistent feel. Even when they brought in the two guys, Burks and Glenn Robinson, I didn't have a lot of time. But, like, all these things have to click. And I'm like, doubting that it can click. Am I wrong?
Well, I'm not saying you're wrong. I look at it a little bit different. I think somebody needs to step up and be a leader. I don't think right now, who's the leader of the Sixers? Who's the guy who's, like, you hope it's your best player, but clearly Joel and Ben have not, you know, they haven't been like, we're going to win, we're going to play well, I'm going to hold everybody accountable. Neither one of those guys has actually did that. And I think that's a fair question. It's legitimate. Listen, if the Sixers lost the first round, I would not be shocked. If they made it to the championship, I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, they have the talent.
They have the talent. It's all going to come down to their mental toughness. I mean, think about it, man. If you got two of the five, you got the two best players in every series, you should feel like we're going to win. The rest of you guys get on my back, and we're going to win. The only team that I would be afraid of is the Milwaukee Bucks. But there's no other team in the East that they're not better than from a talent standpoint.
What do you think Brett Brown needs in these 4 months that he's had to think about things? What do you think he needs to do differently? What kind of a system change do they need? What we're hearing is that he's considering Shake Milton as the starting one and have him bring the ball or have Ben Simmons bring the ball up the floor and then let Shake handle the running of the offense. So like a perimeter of Shake Milton and Ben Simmons and Josh Richardson. With Horford coming off the bench. Is that the way to go?
Hey, Mike.
What?
I don't want to cut you off. So let me get this straight. Mike, I'm just so mad at you for even bringing that crap up right now. So let me get this straight. You got Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, Tobias Harris, and you worried about Shake Milton?
No, I'm not worried about him.
No. See, this is what's crazy. You just sit there and said to me, you did not. They got Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris, and your first question was you talking about a guy named Milkshake?
No,
come on, Mike.
No, listen to me. This is what people are saying in town when it involves the Sixers, that they need a guy who can at least give them some scoring from the perimeter. And this guy
They need them three guys to start earning their damn money. two of those guys are all-stars. They're all-stars. Another guy, y'all gave him close to $200 million. Yo, man, I don't need nothing else.
But it wasn't working, Charles. They got to make some kind of a change. They were sixth.
Well, that's my point. So it's internal. It's not external. It's internal. I'm telling you, though. But I listen, you know I got love for you, Mike. I got a lot of love for you. But please don't tell me
the whole season.
Do not tell me that the Sixers' whole season rides on a damn milkshake.
I'm not an advocate of it. I'm just saying, like, a lot of people are saying they would be better off with that configuration with Horford coming off the bench. That's what I'm saying.
Okay, hey, listen, I didn't even mention Al Horford. So listen, you got Embiid, Simmons, Tobias Harris, Horford, and you worried about a milkshake? Come on, Mike.
Get off this shake thing. I'm not worried about it. I'm just suggesting to you what they're thinking of doing. Would you keep Horford in the starting lineup? It wasn't working with Embiid.
It does not even matter. You, like, listen, there's time. Okay, Greg Popovich. I'm not comparing anybody to Greg Popovich. When we had Greg Popovich in the playoffs when they were winning championship, he says, man, we don't have anybody coming off the bench. He moved Ginobili to the bench. And they still won the championship. The next year, he says, we need more scoring because Tim Duncan is going downhill. He moves him back to the starting lineup. Man, as a coach, you got to make it work. You can't be worried about Milkshake, Mike Scott. Listen, first of all, these guys are all good players. But if you got four guys who are all-stars, you got two guys who are definitely all-stars. Al's been an all-star, and Tobias is an all-star player, really close to being an all-star. Hey, man, if you give me them four dudes right there, I like my chances against any team in the Eastern Conference. Like, the only team that would scare me is Milwaukee, because they got Giannis, but I still like my chances.
Well, so you're saying that should be enough, and I think most people look at the Sixers and go, yeah, talent-wise, it should be enough. So if you're saying that should be enough, then the onus is on the coach now. So if they don't get it done, that's his fault.
I hate saying that, but you are correct.
Okay, because we all like him.
We all like Brett. But at some point, the coach has got to step up. You know, you can't Like, you can't be saying, well, they don't fit together. Well, your job is to make them fit together. Like, okay, you said bring Horford off the bench. We're paying him $100 million. Shut the hell up and come off the bench. Hey, get Joel Embiid. Hey, man, we don't want you out there shooting a bunch of threes. Get your big butt down on the post. That's what a coach, that's your job, Mike. I mean, that's your job. Plain and simple. You got to make this stuff work. You can't keep making excuses where it don't fit together. Like, wait, it don't fit together? Why? You guys were a lucky bounce from probably winning the championship last year. Why are you the number six seed this year? I mean, you think about it. If that ball that Kawhi Leonard does not go in, the Sixers, with the injuries the Warriors had, I think the Sixers win the championship, but that's neither here nor there. But there's no reason for them to be all the way down at the sixth seed. They added Al Horford. There's no reason they should be the number six seed, plain and simple. And there's no reason they should have that discrepancy. If you're 25-0 at home, you shouldn't be 2-23 on the road. There's something going on there, man. That's too much of a discrepancy.
I gotcha. All right, let's look at how this is going to be pulled off now. Everybody's going to be going down to Orlando. They're in the bubble situation. They're playing with no fans. I mean, you played in the league for a lot of years. You didn't play in front of no fans. So what's the difference you think that's going to be for these guys? Does it matter at all, or is it once they take the floor, it's ball?
I think it matters a lot. That goes back to what I'm telling you about the leadership. The leadership is going to have to really, like, hold these guys accountable, whether it's Brett, Ben, Joel, or Al, or Tobias. You're going to have to hold each other accountable because you're going to have to self-motivate. You got to motivate yourself with no fans. So that's the one thing. The Sixers are so inconsistent, which tells me, like, yo, man, why are y'all so inconsistent? You play great at home, the fans motivate you, but you play like crap on the road. But it's going to be interesting because you got to self-motivate yourself. And I think you're going to find out a lot about the Sixers because leadership is going to really have to step up doing this, playing these games with no fans.
Do you think they pull this off? You've lived through the COVID. You were even affected by it. You know how dangerous it is. There's an idealistic view that they're going to be able to pull this off 100%. What's your feeling about it?
I do not think they're going to be able to pull it off. I think that really sucks because a lot of people are going to lose their job. A lot of players going to lose money going forward. I just don't think, you know, I look at it like this. Okay, so we've been going over my schedule for the last week. I got to block off 83 days starting in the next couple weeks. The chances of these guys going 83 days, well, it's 3 months. Let's just round it up. The chance of these guys going 90 days and nobody catches this virus, I just don't think that's possible. I really don't. I think that sucks for everybody. It obviously sucks for the NBA, but a lot of people who work at NBA have lost a lot of their jobs and their livelihood. But I don't see it possible for them to go 3 months without something breaking out. You know, they're not gonna sequester the maids. They're not gonna quarantine the room service people. They're gonna let them go out and play golf. They're gonna bring in people who do manicures and pedicures. They're gonna bring in barbers. I mean, they've done the best they could, but this thing, and we're going to the worst place in the country right now for the virus. I hate to say it. I don't want to be a pain, but I just don't see them getting it done personally.
What do you think stops it? A group of players on the same team, or one? If one star player gets affected, do you think they think twice about continuing?
Well, see, Mike, I think they made a mistake with the Utah-Oklahoma City thing. So I asked them a couple of weeks ago, and they didn't give me no real answer because they didn't want to tell me the truth. Because, you know, I said, well, what if one player gets sick? They said, well, we're going to take him out. I said, well, that's not what you did in Utah. you quarantine the Jazz and Oklahoma City. So are you going to do it different now because you need to make up the money, you need to play games? I don't think that's fair or safe. I mean, when Rudy Gobert got the disease, the virus, they quarantined the Jazz and they quarantined Oklahoma City. So for me, if that's what you did the first time, that's what you got to do going forward. If one player tests, you got to put the whole team in quarantine, and the team they were playing against got to go in quarantine. So I think they boxed themselves into a corner. Like I say, what good is it if one guy on the team got it? What good is it to just take him out? You didn't do that the first time. And I feel bad saying that.
So if they quarantine a team, that's it for that team then.
That's it. I mean, first of all, I think it'll be catastrophic if we start playing and then have to, you can't stop. You can't stop. Let's get one that they're not going, if somebody on the Washington Wizards get the virus, they're not going to quarantine them. Mm-hmm. But if somebody on the Lakers or the Clippers, you're like, no, we're going to stop for them because they got a legit chance. That's not going to be fair. So, man, this thing is, I admire Adam Silver for trying to get it done. I mean, because I know NBA, we've lost at least $1 billion already. And the players going to lose a couple billion dollars going forward because the salary cap going to keep coming down the next couple of years. This just a really awful situation. And I just don't think they can do anything about it.
We're talking to Charles Barkley. A reminder, tonight on NBC Sports Philly, Charles joins Candid Conversations About Race. Michael Barkan will be there. So we'll look forward to seeing that tonight. And while I have you here, let me just go into that area a little bit. You know, you said something on CNN about a month ago where you said it's stressful being black. Now, I want to know exactly what you are trying to put forth with that statement. And then we'll go full circle where you got into a little trouble recently in Baltimore because you showed support for the police and that didn't go over well with some people there. So let's start out with... Go ahead.
Well, hold on. Let me say something. Number one, I'm going to always support the cops. That doesn't mean I want them killing unarmed black men. I'm gonna hold my ground. Mm-hmm. We need cops. We don't need bad cops, but we need cops. And, you know, I hear all these fools on TV and radio talk about defunding the cops. Let me tell you something. They're not going to defund the good neighborhoods. They're only going to defund the hood and poor white people's neighborhoods. Who are they going to call, Ghostbusters? When crime go down, that's the stupidest thing I heard. Listen, I told those people in Baltimore, just because we need the cops. I don't want any unarmed black man getting killed. Or any. And actually, in fairness, if people actually would do their homework, there's actually been more unarmed white people killed than black people. I don't want anybody unarmed getting killed. But we need cops. I'm going to always support the cops, but we need to hold them accountable when they screw up. That being said. What was the second part of your question?
Well, you said it's stressful being black. What has happened since the Floyd situation? Go ahead.
So let me tell you this. So the point I was making, and see, Mike, you know I like you a lot, but they don't ask you about when something bad happened in the white community. So, and this happened like a month period being black. And being a famous black person, you have to comment on it. And that's just the way it is. So one week, we had the young black kid who was killed out jogging. So you have to comment on that. Then 2 weeks later, you got the young crazy lady in New York is threatening the brother who's out here bird watching. She's, I'm going to call the cops on you. And like, that's like, wow, this is unbelievable. Then like 2 weeks later, you get the George Floyd thing. You never get to relax when you're a black person, when you're a celebrity, because you get paid for it to come in on all this crap that's happening. I really get it wears you out mentally and physically. It is what it is. I don't complain about it, but I'm saying it's just stressful because you know something else is going to happen sometime soon, and then you got to comment on it. And that's the point I was talking about being stressful. I mean, like, I'm at home minding my own business, and then the phone starts ringing. Oh, you're in Atlanta. What's your comment on this young black kid who got kid. Like, I said, well, let me find out what happened. And he's like, he's out jogging, and they hunt him down like a dog and kill him. Then 3 weeks later, like I say, you turn on TV, this young girl is screaming at this black dude just because she told him to put his dog on a leash, her dog on a leash. And then obviously you see Mr. Floyd, who was murdered. I mean, come on, man, you can't put your neck on a guy's neck for 9 minutes when he tells you he can't breathe, the crowd telling you he can't breathe. I mean, that's what I talk about, the part of being stressful. Like, it's always something you have to deal with and talk about all the time. That's the point.
I totally understand where you're coming from. I want to ask you this question. Do you believe that what this movement of being a little more conscious of what's going on, that white people have been enlightened more about the plight of black people in America? Because the balance is, you see this country is almost going through a race war that's orchestrated by people in Washington.
Well, it's complex. See, that's one of the reasons, Mike, I get really nervous when we got a bunch of idiots on talk TV in the morning, and then you turn it over to fools on talk radio. And listen, I can have an honest conversation with anybody as long as they want to be fair. But it's very complicated because, listen, this notion that all white people are evil, that's just asinine. We need their help to make some systematic changes. Number one, we need police reform. You can't have cops judging other cops when they put their neck on a guy for 9 minutes and he got his hand in his pocket. That just can't happen. But we need more economic opportunity. But we need allies. We don't need to alienate people. I'm a little bit concerned that we are starting to alienate people. We're trying to take down every statue. Stuff is not even important, in my opinion. I could care less about all these statues and things like that. Never thought about them a day in my life. You know, I somebody told me that I got in trouble like 5 years ago when I said that. I'm like, I'm going to say the same thing tomorrow. Never thought about those statues a day in my life. If they want them up, that's fine. They take them down, that's fine.
Yeah, but awareness is a good thing, Charles. When we become aware...
Mike, nobody cares about those statues. What we need
care about
is
the principle behind the statue, though.
Listen, man, all those people dead. What we need is tangible help to make our communities better. That's what we need. We need better health care. We need better economic opportunity. We need real stuff. Taking down those statues and stuff, that's symbolic.
Yeah.
But we need actual, like, real stuff.
I am absolutely with you 100%. Now, listen, I let you go, but and look forward to your golf spectacular performances this weekend in Tahoe. But I'm thinking about it. You're booked for the next 83 days, which kind of eliminates the annual Charles Barkley in the studio visit.
Well, you know, Mike, I got to tell you something. When I'm in Philadelphia, and I've been in Philly for a minute the last couple of weeks. I'm not even exaggerating. I've had 50 people come up to me and says, yo, man, you got to let us know when you're doing the Mike Missinelli thing. Mike, people, and I look forward to doing it every, and let me tell you something, we're going to make it work.
As long as you want to make it work, we can do it. I'm just trying to figure out how we can do it now.
Yeah, you know, they told us to block off 83 days, but there's going to be some days. I mean, listen, all these series are not going to go 7 games. I mean, we have no idea what teams are going to test for the virus. So there's going to be some off days here and there. But I look forward to doing that with you every year. I really, really do.
I'm glad that you do, because we have a blast doing it. Are you guys going to be back in Philly? Because this is normally the time you're in Philly.
Well, I was in Philly.
Uh-huh.
But I stopped at golf camp on my way to Lake Tahoe.
Okay.
I think I got another week or two. I'm going to find out the rest of my schedule soon. They want me to do some stuff, which I don't even think we should be doing it because that's nothing to talk about. But they want to just kind of let everybody know we're coming back and have a couple of pseudo shows. But because like I say, July the 30th is going to get here quickly. Man, I hope and pray all these players are safe. Because, man, we need to play.
Yeah. Are you doing the shows remotely? Are you going to be in the studio together, or are you going to be in remotes?
We're finalizing that now. You know, Ernie has to be really careful because he's got a special needs son.
Yeah.
Who's on a respirator. So he obviously, one reason he didn't do the match down in Florida, he can't be around anybody. But he's really concerned for his son, Michael, and I understand that. So we haven't made a honest decision yet, but I don't think we're going to go to Florida at all.
Yeah. All right, well, listen, I will stay in touch with you because we're going to make this happen. People look forward to it, and we will definitely carve out a little spot, and I'll be in touch.
Yeah, man, listen, and I'm telling you, I was listening to you last week. You better quit hating on the Sixers. If they play Milwaukee in the second round, so be it.
Yeah, I don't want that. So I want that. I need them to get on a roll by beating Boston and Toronto. Then they're ready for the Bucks. You see what I'm saying?
Well, you know, like I say, I'm really curious. I know you are, too. I can't wait to see Joel's body. Because this thing going to happen quickly. It's going to be very fast-paced. You're going to have to be in shape. You ain't going to have time to get in shape. You're not going to get in shape in a week and a half to 2 weeks. You got to come in shape. So I'm really looking forward to watching the Sixers. You know, I root for the Sixers, but man, it's gonna, this thing, like I said, I just hope everybody's safe and healthy.
All right, man, listen, you stay safe and no fist bumps on that golf course, air bumps.
Oh, yeah, it's gonna be weird having no fans there. Yep. And Mike, let me just tell you something, though. When I get back to Philly, I'm gonna kick your ass. Listen, I'm gonna play well in Lake Tahoe. I'm getting better, Mike. I'm getting better.
Well, listen, I've been trying to get you out for, like, people at my place go, boy, when are you going to bring Charles out? Like, I've been trying for 2 years. He's ducking us.
Hey, as soon as I get back, I'm going to come out there and stomp you.
All right. Sounds good, man. Hey, have fun. Take care. Thanks for coming on.
Sure.
All right. There's Charles Barkley checking in.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.